Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Friday, October the 21st. Welcome to this edition of Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, police clash with protesting students in Johannesburg, and a fire is discovered at a Wits University library.
About 100 books were damaged. Security has determined that the fire was started with a flammable substance, which may have been hidden in a bag found at the scene.
And we'll also be talking to the president of the International Committee of the Red Cross about a delicate mission performed earlier this month.
So we were able, because also of obviously the confidence that both sides have in us, to receive 21 of the Chibok girls and to hand them over to the Nigerian government.
We also hear about the problems facing intersex people in Malawi and why some Zimbabweans don't want their country's security personnel on peacekeeping missions. Stay tuned.
Top story.
There have been clashes between protesting students and police at the University of Witwatersrand in Johannesburg. One student leader was hit by rubber bullets and fire broke out in a library. Students also took to the streets in Pretoria. However, many students in South Africa want to study rather than go along with the protesters' calls for disruption, leaving university administrators in the middle, incurring wrath from both sides. Sobri Govender reports.
Protesting students at the Witwatersrand University reportedly disrupted classes and other students who were sitting for exams before police fired rubber bullets to disperse them. Student leader Shayita Kala was shot 10 times, according to a tweet shared by the Students' Representative Council. Earlier, scores of books were destroyed after one of the biggest libraries at the university caught fire. The police suspect an arsonist may have started the fire and have launched investigations. Shirona Patel, spokesperson for the college, says they are shocked by what had happened.
About 100 books were damaged. Security has determined that the fire was started with a flammable substance, which may have been hidden in a bag found at the scene. The fire was extinguished quickly and a high-level investigation is underway by Wits Security and the police.
Students from Tshwane University of Technology and the University of Pretoria also took part in the Fees Must Fall protest march in Pretoria. They gathered at the lawns of the historic Union Building, which is the seat of government. The angry students made a number of demands, which included the immediate release of all students arrested around the country, the removal of police personnel and police vehicles from university campuses, and that fees must be dropped immediately. Government spokesperson Bongani Lunga said after the students were dispersed that there was no need for violent protests.
While students have a democratic right to protest, what is unacceptable is the destruction of property and the violence that we have seen in various campuses.
The government has responded to the demands of the students by announcing that all steps were being taken to normalize the situation at university campuses. The minister in the presidency, Jeff Adebe, announced at a press conference that the government had decided to assist all poor and those students who are from middle-income families.
We'll subsidize, as Minister Nzimande highlighted, the 2017 fee adjustment of up to 8% to pay for the fee increase through a gap funding grant on behalf of all poor, working class, and the missing middle students, that is students with a family household income of up to 600,000 rand per annum.
Meanwhile, after weeks of disruptions and violent protests, the University of the Western Cape in Cape Town has chosen to cancel all face-to-face lectures and to continue all academic work through the internet.
Sobri Govender, South Africa has a new public protector, a job, an institution, which is best described as that of a constitutionally mandated anti-corruption watchdog. The new incumbent is Busiwe Mkhwebane, and she took over on Saturday from the popular and resolute Thuli Madonsela, who many will remember for her tussle with President Zuma over the upgrading of his Nkandla private residence. The new public protector faced the media for the first time on Thursday, and one topic was what is known as the State Capture Report into allegations that President Suma allowed a powerful Indian business family, the Guptas, to have undue political sway over him.
The report is under locks and key. That's what I requested the investigators to make sure that even the electronic version, they are the custodians of that particular report, and they need to make sure that it's not compromised.
Busiwe Mkhwebane, South Africa's new public protector. Our correspondent in Johannesburg, Tuzo Kumalo, has been following her media briefing, and I asked him what sort of an impression she made.
It is difficult to tell if she's going to be exactly like Thuli Madonsela, but of course she's a different character and she also does things differently. But what is interesting is that the new private protector has said she wants to do things different from what Madonsela was doing. For example, she says she's not going to be engaging outside experts when investigating issues. She's not going to get donor funding for the projects that the office is doing. And also she says the way she's going to do things, people should not judge her by what Madonsela was doing, but they should judge her for what she is. And at the moment, what we know about her is that when she was appointed, the DA suspected that she was a spy because she was working for a government intelligence service. And through that, they are saying she might be very lenient when it comes to investigating cases of government officials. So for now, it's not clear, but she has promised to be impartial and to investigate all issues with thoroughness.
But did she respond directly to those allegations by the Democratic Alliance that she was going to be soft on government officials?
She said in the media briefing that suspicion is unfounded because she's going to treat all issues the same. She's going to investigate even issues that involve those in political power. So from her word, she says she's not going to tolerate anything like that. But her focus, she said, will be taking the office of the private protector to the grassroots, to the people on the ground, which of course to some means that she's not going to be committed enough to investigate top-notch cases.
What does this change at the top of the Office of the Public Protector mean for the investigations into President Suma and the Gupta family?
At the moment, she says that report is under lock and key. You remember that the courts directed that the reports be kept safely because President Zuma and Minister Van Rooyen, they are challenging it, saying it can't be released because they were not given enough chance to respond to some of the issues. So at the moment, she says that report is kept safe in her office, and she waits now for the court to decide if the report is going to be released or not. But what is interesting about the whole thing is that when she was asked if there are any chances that she can change the report, she said if there are contestations of the report and the court allows her to do it, she might have to reopen some of the issues, which is a very great worry to many people because they expected that the report is now complete. It should be tabled before the nation so that people can judge for themselves.
Tuzo Kumalo in Johannesburg.
News, analysis and feature reports. All that here on Africa Link.
And one of the biggest stories to come out of Africa so far this month is the release of 21 of the kidnapped Chibok schoolgirls after 2.5 years in captivity. Now, crucial to the girls' release was the work of the International Committee of the Red Cross, the ICRC, which acted as a mediator. Our correspondent, Coletta Wanjoe, caught up with the president of the ICRC, Peter Maura, in Addis Ababa. Their conversation turned quickly to the Chibok girls and the ICRC's commitment to neutrality.
Well, in such issues, ICRC takes wherever in the world the role of a neutral intermediary trying to facilitate agreements between the parties. What ICRC does not do in conflict region is mediate or negotiate with the parties to any hostage releases or ceasefire agreements, because this would be much too much a political task. But as a neutral, impartial and independent humanitarian actor, I think we have a license to be a neutral intermediary in the execution of possible agreements which are found by the parties, and in making available the necessary logistics so that if parties agree on certain steps, we are able to execute. And so we were able, because also of obviously the confidence that both sides have in us, to receive 21 of the Chibok girls and to hand them over to the Nigerian government.
How challenging is it for ICRC to work in situations where we have recurring conflicts? For example, we see more tension in South Sudan now.
Today's world and conflicts from South Sudan to the Horn of Africa, to the Lake Chad region, to the DRC, to the Central African Republic, to Libya, just to mention some of the Africans and leave for the time being some of the other challenges outside. So there is no question that all these conflicts offer an enormous amount of challenges, security challenges, access challenges, challenges to know the parties to the conflict, to understand the dynamics of the conflicts, to be able to operate in such an environment, to engage with the arms bearers, to understand the chain of command of those arms bearers, to understand the needs of people, to know what communities can do and what they cannot do, what they need and what they don't need. And in that sense, we just take things as they are and work from there. Having said that, and I just come from a meeting with the Ethiopian president and foreign minister, we certainly agree with the authorities in this country that forceful political engagement is needed to find political solution to those problems.
Peter Maurer, president of the International Committee of the Red Cross.
Human rights.
Intersex is a general term used for a variety of conditions in which a person is born with a reproductive or sexual anatomy that doesn't seem to fit the typical definitions of female or male. The problems begin for intersex people when the environment or country into which they were born doesn't accept them for what they are or respect their human rights. In Malawi, Miriam Kaliza introduces us to two young people who have lived as both male and female and who are still figuring out their own gender identity.
On the far end of a soccer pitch sits a person. You cannot really tell whether the person is a man or a woman due to mixture of both masculine and feminine features. Let's call this person Alex, who wishes to remain anonymous. From the day Alex was born, her parents decided to treat her as both male and female. He was, therefore, given two names, a boy and a girl's name. But the challenge was how to present the names in school. Hence, they had to go with one gender, and he was a boy at school. But Alex, in fact, also identifies as a girl. When he was in his teenage years, the female features in him became stronger. So Alex personally began presenting herself as a girl. She says it was difficult to be free among friends.
Of course, you are
life has been okay. Slowly people are accepting what I am, even though there are some people who do not believe up until now that I'm a woman because I grew up as a man. So it is difficult for some of them to come to terms with that. Others say lots of things that could make me angry, but I've gotten used to it now. In the Salima district, some 200 kilometers from the capital, Lilongwe, another intersex person is also facing a share of difficulties. It is break time at Karonga Primary School in Salima, a time when most pupils make use of the washrooms. But for one 12-year-old, break time is stressful. Let's call this student Madalito. Madalito cannot use these washrooms because Madalito does not have the typical male or female sexual organs and doesn't want to attract attention. According to Madaliso's father, when the child was born, it put them at loggerheads with some members of the community and family. Madaliso's father explains.
Our child was born through birth attendants and not at the hospital. We then discovered that the child was born with both male and female sex organs. The birth attendants, together with some elders, wanted to kill the baby. They called it an abomination and said that when the child is grown, he will turn into a wizard. But I did not agree with that. I chased everyone out. I could not allow them to kill our baby, regardless of the gender.
Madaliso had to change schools because pupils would follow him into the toilet to leer at his private parts. Malawi's Center for the Development of People, which advocates for the rights of minority groups, says the lack of recognition for intersex people amounts to a violation of human rights. Gift Trapens works with the center.
We need to, you know, educate Malawians because those cases are not supposed to be decided when the child is born. Because if they are able to decide on behalf of the child, it always goes to the other.
Alex and Madaliso are just two among several intersex persons across Malawi who live with segregation, maltreatment and discrimination as part of their everyday lives.
Miriam Kaliza in Malawi. You're listening to Africa Link, coming to you from Deutsche Welle in Bonn, Germany. Zimbabwean pro-democracy movements and opposition parties have asked the United Nations to withdraw their country's security personnel from various peacekeeping missions around the globe. The groups argue that Zimbabwe's security personnel are no longer fit for peacekeeping missions following growing allegations of brutality on citizens at home. DW's correspondent in Harare, Privilege Mushaniri, has sent us this report.
Nearly 30 opposition and pro-democracy movements, plus 150 individuals who signed the petition, said the Zimbabwean government is in breach of international standards against violence, in particular the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. This multilateral treaty, adopted by the UN in 1966, commits its parties to respect the right to life, freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, electoral rights, and rights to due process and a fair trial. In the past 5 months, police in Zimbabwe have been accused of using excessive force on protesters following a wave of demonstrations against President Robert Mugabe's government. Rights activist Linda Masarira, who with a group of others handed over the petition, says Zimbabwe Republic police have subjected citizens to torture and cruel treatment.
We really don't see the reason why they should be on peacekeeping missions outside Zimbabwe, yet they are failing to maintain peace in Zimbabwe. It is a clear indication of double standards. A child molester cannot go and open a daycare center.
Spokesperson for the Zimbabwe main opposition party, the Movement for Democratic Change, Obed Gutu, says they have exhausted all peaceful means of engaging Zimbabwe's security personnel, resulting in the decision to petition the UN.
We want the United Nations to appreciate that we have done everything that we can domestically to engage the local law enforcement agencies to make sure that they at least respect the constitution, but they don't.
But speaking to me via telephone, Zimbabwe's Information Minister Christopher Mushowe poured scorn on the petition, saying pro-democracy movements are rather misguided.
What brutality are they talking about? It is them who have the habit of throwing stones at the law enforcement agents. It is them who request for peaceful demonstration, which have never been peaceful. They do not understand peacekeeping mission more than the United Nations.
Zimbabwe security officers have over the past 36 years been highly recommended to UN peacekeeping missions in countries such as Bosnia and Herzegovina, East Timor, Sudan, South Sudan, Liberia, among others. Political analyst Alexander Rosero says though pro-democracy movements seem to be jumping the gun to approach the UN, there are limited options as the ruling party controls state institutions.
This is not just posturing by pro-democracy movements. It's also an eye-opener in as much as Zimbabwe's appreciation of democracy, of human rights is concerned, because on a daily basis there are allegations, reports and at times evidence of heavy brutality that the police is daily perpetrating on the entire citizenry of Zimbabwe.
And that report was compiled by Privilege Mushaniri in Harare.
Your C.
It's Friday and we're coming to the end of our programme, but we're not going to leave you before you've had your say about the stories we've been covering this week. Here's Wanjiku Mwaura and Crispin Wakideo.
Right, Wanjiku, let's now run through some of your feedback. And one of the major stories that made rounds on social media is the public exchange of words between the First Lady of Nigeria, Aisha Buhari, and her husband, President Muhammadu Buhari. Now, Aisha has been criticizing her husband's leadership and say that she may not back him up for re-election as president come 2019 if things continue the way they are in his government.
Yes, indeed. In fact, Buhari laughed off his wife's comment during an exclusive interview with DW and said, and I quote, "I don't know which party my wife belongs to. All I know, she belongs to my kitchen and my living room and the other room." End of quote.
And of course, this created a huge discourse on social media with the hashtag #TheOtherRoom trending on Twitter for several days. To sample just a few comments, Konar Shalom said, "Buhari is becoming a real Donald Trump of Nigeria." Another comment was from Idris Bello from Nigeria, and he says, "All Nigerian men, come out now and tell us where your other room is and what you do in there."
And Uche Onegeria in Canada also got into the conversation, and her comments were, "Never have I seen Nigerian men come together for women's rights than now with this hashtag Other Room Saga. Real or propaganda?"
Another story that created a lot of engagement was the release of 21 Chibok girls abducted by Boko Haram. They were reunited with their families after 2.5 years in captivity.
And of course, it's still unclear under what circumstances they were freed, but there are claims that they were swapped by 4 Boko Haram commanders, something the Nigerian government has refuted.
That's true. And what has been the reaction on social media to that story?
Well, Martin Mula says, "Kudos to the Nigerian government. This shows it's really working hard to rescue Chibok girls."
But Charles Livison said he is smelling a rat in the whole Chibok Girls saga.
His comments didn't go well with Sincere Vionce, who responded, "There is no time you won't smell a rat, whether the girls are released or in captivity. Your nose is the problem here."
Last but not least, our exclusive interview with former South Sudanese First Vice President Riek Machar also got people talking.
Absolutely. He has vowed to return to the country months after violent clashes forced him out of the capital, Juba. And on that, Abraham Kisa said both Kiir, the president, and Machar are warlords, and that the country needs a leader, not politicians who are drunk with power. Kiir has failed to be a symbol of unity.
Well, that's all we had time for today. Thanks so much for your time, and keep those comments coming.
Crispin Makideu and Wanjiku Mwaura, many thanks. Remember, it's very easy to get in touch with us if you want to contribute to Your Say. Simply send an email to feedback.africa@dw.com or an SMS to country code 49 160 957 595 10 or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. And now, news of some important changes to this programme, Africa Link, coming up at the end of the month.
Join the new Africa Link show from October 31st for coverage of African and international news and much more, live at 16 UTC, Monday to Friday.
Back on this edition of Africa Link, a reminder of our main stories. In Johannesburg, police have fired rubber bullets at protesting students, and a fire at Wits University was being investigated. Also in South Africa, the new public protector has been holding her first media briefing, and we've also been hearing about the challenges facing intersex people in Malawi. Then we end another week here on Africa Link. Isaac Mugabe will be here on Monday. Do join him if you can. Have a pleasant weekend. This is Mark Caldwell in Bonn.